to help us make some sense out of what was a tumultuous week, welcome now Bob Prince. He's co-CIO of Bridgewater Associates, and Ed Hyman, chairman of Evercore ISI. Welcome to both of you. Great to have you here. So, Ed, I want to start with you because I watched your video from a couple days ago, and you said you've never seen in your career, and it is quite a career, one of the original people on Wall Street, we're going to say, you've never seen this kind of disconnect between the markets on the one hand and the economy on the other.
Well, I'm catching up. I'm beginning to figure it out. So what happened this week, you mentioned the 20 basis point increase in bond yields. And I see now that's the problem. And I've gone back really since then. I've looked at 1987. And bond yields just went straight up. They went up to over 10%. And they kept going up. And they went up so high, they finally killed the stock market. And so that's... I'm sort of getting it. And in that period, the economy was fine. Even when the market went down 30%, the economy stayed fine. And the Fed finally had to eat back off. But that's the issue. And, you know, that issue is being driven by inflation worries. And the price of oil was up, I think, $5 this week. It's not made a new high, but it's moving back up. And so there you have it. The economy's good. Earnings are good. Earnings have come in strong for the first quarter. But rates are going up, and inflation is a worry. And, you know, Larry Summers is on your show. I've been with him all the way on inflation's not transitory. But that's the issue right there.
So Bob, Ed says that's the problem. Is it also the solution? Because if we really have a lot of inflation, don't we have to tighten monetary conditions? Don't we have to get the yields up in order to get our arms around the inflation?
Yeah, well, we think we're at the beginning of a process. We're at the beginning of a challenging period. The markets have discounted a tightening, but there hasn't really been a tightening yet. So we're going to find out, as the Fed plays the game, we're going to find out how they play it. They're probably confronted with the most challenging set of circumstances in the last, like, 60 years, 50, 60 years since the 70s, which is a monetary inflation. The inflation that we've experienced in the last 20 years is what we might call a cyclical inflation. You get, you know, strong growth, low unemployment, you know, you get a little bit of inflation, they tighten preemptively against it. But by and large, money and credit growth was relatively stable. Nominal growth was not too high. What we have now is a monetary inflation, which was brought about by the injection of a massive amount of money and credit into the system, which is now getting spent in the form of nominal GDP, nominal spending. And that nominal spending is way more than the output, and as a natural result of that, you get prices going up. So as you play that out going forward, it's become a self-reinforcing process. We've got a self-reinforcing inflation cycle going on, which is due to monetary considerations. And so what's going to be required to reverse that would be to reduce money and credit, you know, comparable to the money and credit that was put in. The challenge when you have a monetary inflation like this is it becomes very difficult for the Fed to simultaneously get the inflation rate that they want and the growth rate that they want. So you typically then have to err on the side of to have the growth rate you want, you accept too high of inflation, or if you fight inflation, you get a recession. So we're just in the beginning of that game right now.
So, and how much of that are we doing already? I mean, you've pointed out in your charts the M2 is actually coming down. It had been growing dramatically. So it's starting to come down already. They're about to start selling off the balance sheet, taking some out that way. Are we already on our way to getting our arms around inflation through really getting control of the money?
So, David, you shouldn't have Bob and myself on this show together. Because what you just laid out, you know, as you know, I agree with 125%. You know, we had a huge increase in the checks to people. The balance sheet went up like crazy, and that manifests itself in a huge increase in the money supply. And now we're just trying to figure out how to get rid of that thing. So it got up to about 30% on a year-on-year basis. And in March, it was down to 10%. And I would guess in April, it's probably 7%. So we've already done quite a bit because we're not sending checks out anymore. And the balance sheet's going to start to run off now. So we've made some progress. And I'd say, Bob, that I've been surprised at how much has happened with just a 1% funds rate, mm-hmm. no shrinking of the balance sheet. Suddenly, mortgage rates up 250 basis points, the dollar's up 15%, and the stock market's down almost 15%, and some stocks have been, you know, really, they're down 50 or 70%.
So are the markets doing part of the Fed's job for it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But probably not enough. And I, the, you know, Ed raises the point that the financial markets are much weaker than the economy. That's kind of the reverse of where we were for a while, where the financial markets were much stronger than the economy. And that does relate to the kind of things he's talking about, where, you know, if you take something like money supply is not growing like it was. The Fed's not injecting money as they were. They're going to be drawing it out. But if you look at an economy, we sort of look at it in a very simple way, which is there's a total amount of sources of funds, and then there's where they go, the uses of funds. And they can, the sources, there are really only three sources of funds. You've got the money supply, you've got credit, and you've got income. And that goes into spending, and it goes into financial markets, and then there's this a residual that sits out with the Fed. And the what's interesting is that different things go in different places. When you inject money in the system, it tends to go into the financial markets. Credit tends to go into spending. So what we've got going on right now is the tightening has reduced the flow of money into the financial markets. So we've got a hole in the bond market. We've got yields going up. But the credit is going into spending. So spending is staying high, but interest rates and price are going up and prices are going down. It's the opposite of where we were. And this is going to be a real balancing act, because if you're the Fed and you tighten and the stock market falls and the bond yield goes up, but the spending and the inflation continues, you know, how do you play that game? It's not going to be easy.
So, Ed, we did get jobs numbers in the United States on Friday, at the very end of the week. We're still creating a lot of good jobs. Is that helping or is that hurting? We've got a lot more jobs. That would increase, actually, the amount of money people have to spend. Wages are going up. So is that helping or is that hurting?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, the Fed wants the economy to slow down. And so this is one of the good news is bad news programs. But employment, when you sit down and think about the economy, it's very complicated, housing, capital spending, credit expansion, but employment's everything. And whether you work for Bloomberg or Bridgewater or a casino, you count it in employment. And employment is definitely strong. I must have half a dozen measures of employment, and they're all strong, like the employment numbers that came out today. I've been surprised that wages look like they might be slowing a little bit, but they're still quite rapid. And I hadn't quite thought about, Bob, what you said, but bank loans are now really taking off. And so that's in your three-part program. The money supply is slowing, but now the bank loans are starting to go up. So I'm still haven't quite figured out how I think this is going to play out, because in a period like 87, the economy really just kept on going. And also in another soft landing period of 98, when you had the Russia crisis and LTCM, you look back at it, I thought we were completely dead. But the economy, you know, came right on through. So it'll be very interesting to see how we thread the needle on this. But I think we'll reach a point where the community will decide that the Fed can take a little off the brake right now. We're not there yet. I mean, not even hardly started.
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that Ed had an interesting chart where you just added employment growth and wage growth, and I think they added up to 9%.
Right.
Right? That's basically income.
Yeah.
So if you got 9% income growth, you're going to get 9% spending growth because people spend their money. And if you got 9% spending growth but output can't grow by 9%, you're going to have inflation. So you're probably at a peaking process. Like I think Ed points out, you've had a rise in bond yields. You've had some tightening from the stock market, the dollar. and money supply slowing down a little bit. But I think as you play that forward, one of the things you have to think through is where does that all settle? You may get a, it may get a turn like this, but where does it settle? And if it settles at an inflation rate of 4 or 5%, is that going to be accepted by the Fed? Or, and if you look at what's priced into the bond market and the interest rate markets, the short-term interest rate's only priced to go up a little over 3%. So if I had a 4 or 5% inflation rate, I'm stuck with a negative real yield on cash. And the inflation rate that's priced in for the future is only 2.7. So it, where you settle out is as important as the turning points that you have.
Sounds right to me. Bob Prince and Ed Hyman will be staying with us as we turn from what happened this week to what investors can do about it all. This is Bloomberg Wall Street Week. I'm David Westin. Ed Hyman of Evercore ISI and Bob Prince of Bridgewater Associates have stayed with us as we turn our attention to what investors can do with the uncertainty and change that they face just about everywhere they turn right now. So, Bob, let's start with you. Goodness knows you're responsible for a lot of investment. If we talk about an investor rather than a trader, what do you do with your analysis of where we are on the market right now?
Well, the first principle is diversification, right? So if you have a diversified portfolio, you could just sort of go through the ups and the downs and you begin confident about the other side. And then if you want to tactically move around that, you can do that. So you, first thing you have to have a start with a diversified portfolio. And the problem is most people don't have a very well diversified portfolio. If, you know, if you have even stocks and bonds, let's just say you have a balance of stocks and bonds. If we're headed into a stagflation environment, and I wouldn't say we're there yet, but we're on the cusp of that. Stagflation meaning high inflation with low growth. That's actually, if you go back historically and you study stagflations, the worst asset in a stagflation is equities. It's even worse if you're in a stagflation and you get an aggressive tightening of monetary policy. We're somewhere in the vicinity of that. So equities by themselves is not a safe place. It may work out, but it's not a safe place and it's not diversified. But even to hold bonds, bonds do poorly in stagflation because of the inflation problem and the tightening of monetary policy. Cash does very badly. Cash is not safe because you lock in a negative real yield on cash and you have basically assured wealth destruction. So you need some way of benefiting from a rise in inflation to at least balance those two forces. And so whether it's inflation index bonds or whether it's commodities, a diversified basket of commodities, you need to get that kind of diversification in the portfolio. And I think within the equity market, there's the thing you really need to pay attention to is the cash flows of the assets. You know, we've been in an environment where cash flow didn't matter too much. It was, you know, where things are going to play out 10 years from now. But if you're in an environment of high nominal growth, that spending will be the income to companies, and that income will be profits. And so in the short run, you'll face risk from the tightening. But over time, if you're invested in equities that have a reliable cash flow stream, you know, Warren Buffett said in the short run, the stock market's a voting machine. In the long run, it's a weighing machine. That's because cash flows accumulate over time. So even within the equity market, I think it's important to be thinking about that.
So, Ed, as you look at the markets, the various markets right now, I heard commodities. Is commodities a good investment, do you think? Are commodities about to go up more? They're already gone up a bit.
Gone up a lot. So I like the diversification idea. What we talked about at the beginning of uncertain times, difference between the markets and the economy, I like cash. I know I'm not...
Really?
I'm not getting ahead on cash, but I get my cash back.
But you're actually falling behind if you have substantial inflation, right?
Yeah, but I think inflation is going to be about 4%. But I'm saying just... if I was advising people, I would say, first, let's have a certain amount of cash so you can sleep at night and you're not worried if your house price goes down or your stock values go down. But diversification, and I like the idea that hard assets or commodity-like things, the energy sector, sort of industrial renaissance idea, I like that some. But I'm not as negative on the tech sector as the stocks are. I mean, I still think we're in you know, a pretty rich technology revolution. But, you know, that's the stock market. And real estate is, you know, it's too expensive. But, you know, not the worst thing you can do.
So is everything else.
So that's one of the problems, really, is that everything else is expensive. So I like your diversification, you know, plus some cash in case something happens. But I'm not that negative on the outlook.
We've been talking about various sectors here in terms of diversification. What about geographic diversification? What do you think about non-U.S. investments, Bob?
Well, it's increasingly important. We break the world down into three regions. There are three major monetary regimes, monetary and credit systems in the world. There's a dollar system, there's a euro system, and now there's an RMB system in China. And so you can break the world down into North America, Europe, and Asia. It doesn't have to be China. I think it's Asia. And Asia has been a great diversifier relative to North America, relative to Europe. And so geographic diversification is going to be much more valuable in the future than it was in the past, because you increasingly have China is much more of a powerful independent economic zone with an independent monetary policy, whereas up to 2015 they had a linked exchange rate to the dollar, and they really were not so independent. But they're driving themselves to be much more of a, you know, the domestic economy is the mainstay. And so the more they have an independent economy, independent monetary system, and that'll spill over to the rest of Asia, geographic diversification is going to be really important.
Just quickly here at the end, independent, but how independent? Do you have to be concerned with the deglobalization of the
Probably.
Globe?
Probably. You know, that keeps the inflation rate a little bit higher. But, David, I'd like to say that not exactly related to this, but, boy, we have a really funny economy where Europe and China are in trouble and the U.S. is doing pretty well.
Well, that's for sure. We saw that with the Bank of England just this week, basically yes. Projecting stagflation or the equivalent of stagflation, it looked like. Yeah. It's a practical matter. Thank you so much. Really great to have the two of you here. I hope you come back. This is a great conversation. That's Bridgewater's Bob Prince and also Ed Hyman of Evercore ISI.